you're going to just cut in? You're just going to cut in like that, Max, or whoever is responsible for the actually rather clever public service announcement? Right on time. My God. 1 a.m. in New York City over listener-sponsored non-commercial Pacifica Radio in New York City, broadcasting at 99.5 FM, webcasting at WBAI.org, and videocasting on Facebook Live just as soon as I can get my act together, which you know will be about 3 a.m., and then we'll actually be underway. No, not underweight. If only. Stay tuned. By the way, What's the Frequency, Kenneth, with Paul Fisher, was brought to you on recording. Hour of the Wolf, a weekly program dedicated to science fiction, fantasy, enchantment, and the imagination. My name is Jim Freund. This week our guest is A.T. Sayre. Stay tuned.
I'm Dan Persons, and this is my Hour of the Wolf review. About midway through Harley Quinn, Birds of Prey, formerly known obnoxiously as Birds of Prey and the Fantabulous Emancipation of One Harley Quinn, the bad guy, Roman Sionis, played by Ewan McGregor, suffers a setback in his plans to become the crime kingpin of Gotham City, and lashes out in anger at a woman in his nightclub, humiliating her by forcing her to dance on a table while her male companion, it's not clear if he's supposed to be a boyfriend or a John, strips her. It's not an especially unexpected event in this kind of comic book movie, now that the production arm of DC has decided to follow Deadpool's lead and go all in on R-rated takes of their characters. But there is an especial unpleasantness to the sequence, and I'm guessing the nastiness is not by accident, that director Kathy Yan and screenwriter Christina Hodson had decided that this would be their own hashtag MeToo moment against a cliche bit of sexual abuse that's been too frivolously handled in other films. I'm not unsympathetic to the stance, particularly since this is supposed to be a film about a group of women finding their own power and rising up against the patriarchy. But in a scenario whose ambience otherwise leans towards a campy, jokey anarchy, the unabashed meanness of this scene throws whatever fun's being had way off kilter. I haven't read other reviews yet, but I'm guessing if there are critics savaging this film, it was this sequence that pushed them over the edge. Harley Quinn, Birds of Prey, is overall a loud, manic, ungodly mess. Its characters are wildly uneven, with Margot Robbie as Harley Quinn mashing overly hard on the flippant psychopath button. She calms down a bit as the film progresses, mercifully, while McGregor's allegedly gay crime lord ranges from raving queen to just plain raving. There's been discussion about LGBTQ representation in this film, but I'm not sure how McGregor's character advances the cause. Meanwhile, director Yan struggles to keep the actual Birds of Prey, you know, the ones in the title, the ones whose franchise this film is supposed to be establishing, in the spotlight, but with the ill-fated decision to make Harley the focus character while flitting briefly between Rosie Perez's embattled cop Renee Montoya, Journey Smollett-Bell's super-powered Chanteuse Black Canary, and Mary Elizabeth Winstead's crossbow-wielding The Huntress, there just isn't enough time to let the crime-fighting team coalesce in a way that leaves us eager to see more of them. I have to admit, though, for a film whose entire plot boils down to a group of people vying for possession of a teenage pickpocket long enough for her to poop out a priceless diamond she swallowed, yes, that's the plot, I was kind of entranced by the whole thing. Yes, it is a train wreck, even more so than Suicide Squad. But like Suicide Squad, I'll take Harley Quinn, Birds of Prey's anarchic narrative on crack to Zack Snyder's objectivist castor oil any day. I'm kind of sad that the film's poor box office probably means we won't be seeing a follow-up. Chaos may not make for great art, but it can provide for a couple of hours of fun. And please remember to check out Gamera 3D, The Goodman Cut, the latest episode in my new Historama 3D series. You can watch it in virtual reality through YouTube VR or using red-blue anaglyph glasses through regular old YouTube. Just search for Historama 3D, and there you go. For Hour of the Wolf, I'm Dan Persons.
The one time you finish on time, and I'm hardly prepared, Dan. Anyhow, I mean, Birds of Prey or Words of Prey? No, not for me. I finally succumbed to watching parts of Suicide Squad. And you know what they, I mean, if it hadn't been for the fact that it was like 3 a.m. and it was a sleepless point for me, I would use the line, that's X many hours I'm not getting back from my life. And that's true of, with the exception of Wonder Woman, any of the DC Comics movies. And the and Wonder Woman, like the first two-thirds that Patty Jenkins directed, is fine. But then the club-handed Uber director of Zack Snyder comes in and just says, okay, okay, you've had a good movie up until now. Now let me screw it up by giving you a pointless fight scene that will leave the person who you know is going to be the victor, and the person who you know is going to be the bad person gone. Vanquish, because it's a god, you can't kill him, but... And because the role is played by David Thewlis, you're glad that he wasn't killed, because David Thewlis, T-H-E-W-L-I-S, just think early Mike Leigh films, like Naked. What's your favorite David Thewlis film?
It might actually be Naked, yeah.
I think so. I mean, he's good in a lot of movies. He even holds his head up during Harry Potter. He does okay.
A lot of actors, I mean, the Harry Potter films are not my cup of tea, because I'm not a teenager. But
I'm not either. I like them.
Well, it's just, I mean, the thing about the whole, a few years ago, I was home for Christmas.
Who are you?
Who am I?
Who is you?
I'm sure most of your audience is asking that right about now.
That's and as the audience stand-in, as it were, that's why I am asking you.
Okay.
And also that way I can return my attention
so I can log in. You want me to kill time is what you're saying right now.
Well, not kill it, but just harm it a little.
Stretch the time.
We don't want to kill time.
Okay.
Not during Hour of the Wolf, which we're going to have to talk about in a moment.
Yes.
By the way, because there have been major, major events in the force regarding Hour of the Wolf, not the radio show this week. Very sad stuff.
Okay.
In all seriousness.
All right.
Okay, see if you can figure it out. Who's the star of Hour of the Wolf?
You?
Not the radio show.
Oh.
The radio show is named after a movie.
Oh, yes, the Bergman film.
Yes.
I see what you're saying, yes.
Max von Sydow died.
I'm American. I'm allowed to mispronounce anything I want.
Nah. It's S-Y-D-O-W. Can pronounce it any way you like.
Yeah.
But he pronounced it Max von Sydow, even in Flash Gordon playing Ming the Merciless.
Yeah.
But this was one of the great, great actors of all time.
Absolutely, yeah.
And
what an incredible career. If you really look at his filmography, it's ridiculous.
300-plus movies?
Well, I mean, that's something that you get from actors from that period anyways. I mean, Michael Caine's done that. I mean,
Michael Caine deserves to be in 500 movies, as far as I'm concerned.
He probably has, to be honest.
But actually, yeah.
It's the concept of the professional actor is what with people like Sydow and Michael Caine. And it's not so much being concerned about the quality of the film that they're going to be in. It's just, I'm working and just continuing to work.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if you remember... Michael Caine was in Jaws 3D, which is...
That poor man. He must have been broke year.
Do you know what his quote was on that one?
No.
Someone asked him about Jaws 3D, and he said, "I have not seen the film. I hear it is terrible. But I've been in the summer house that it bought, and it's magnificent."
Yeah.
And that's basically, I mean,
George Martin has lines like that. He probably took them from Michael Caine.
Quite possibly.
Yeah.
But it's just, I mean, people like Sydow and people like Michael Caine, they're just professional actors. They always want to be working.
But von Sydow, unfortunately, did do a bunch of really poor films, of which I do not number Flash Gordon. I enjoy Flash Gordon.
I don't know.
Horrible, horrible, badly made movie.
Yes.
It is so camp.
I think the porn version of Flash Gordon actually has a higher Rotten Tomato reading.
Okay, it's not Flesh Gordon. The director was Carter Stevens, whose real name was Mal Warab, who used to be on this show
and
on a regular...
Record, I've never actually seen Flesh Gordon. I'm just going to put that out there.
Okay,
I've never actually watched that.
They show it occasionally in an R-rated version, and it doesn't matter. The good parts of the movie could be PG. I mean, the stop motion animation in that film alone, where, you know, they wake the Kraken or whatever it is at that point, and he just gets up in fine stop motion animation, because the movie is made, after all, by a bunch of West Coast science fiction fans, mm-hmm. Who are all friends of Ray Harryhausen. And the monster gets up and says, "A monster's work is never done." And that is the level of the seriousness of Flesh Gordon. And it's got Max von Sydow and...
Max von Sydow is not in Flesh Gordon. He's in Flash
Gordon. Oh, sorry, he's in Flash Gordon. Yeah, he'd probably prefer to be in Flesh Gordon, but...
Possibly.
All, you know, him and Liv Ullmann. I mean, yeah. But there was mostly Bergman and
Liv... Flash Gordon had a better soundtrack because it's Queen.
Well, that's the thing about that movie, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's the soundtrack.
It really is. Soundtrack is what saves it from
being... It's all the title song, especially. But also, they did some videos from Flash Gordon using the footage from Metropolis.
I'd have to watch it again.
The title song, Flash, and it actually uses... sequences from Metropolis in it.
Oh, you're talking about a music video that they did not.
Yes,
not oh, I thought
a Queen
saying,
music video.
I thought you were saying they were actually in the film. Was like
no. MTV it was on MTV.
Well, I didn't get MTV until I was about 15, and then by then
but the videos
they stopped doing music videos by the time I actually got.
Okay,
it.
But you see, there's this thing called YouTube.
I haven't.
They're all on YouTube.
I'm sure they are. I haven't watched the official music videos for those Queen songs. A lot of the other ones, but not those ones in particular. Because I love Queen. I've always liked Queen. They're a great band. But I haven't...
Is Queen a great band, or was it Freddie Mercury, I must ask?
No, they were a great band. It was more than just the...
More than just him? Maybe. Maybe.
Freddie Mercury,
I thought very
Freddie
little
Mercury
of the movie, Bohemian Rhapsody.
I have not heard good things about the movie on certain levels.
I'll tell you what is good is Rocket Man, but that's...
Yeah, I haven't seen that one. I'm not into like the rock biopics.
No, but that one's a good movie.
Well,
if it were about a fictional character named Elton John, that movie would stand up.
Okay.
That's good criteria.
But the thing about Queen is... Yes, I mean, obviously they had one of the best rock and roll showmen of all time as their front man, but they also had one of the best guitarists in rock music. One of the most cohesive bands put together.
Why is his name eluding
Brian
me?
May.
Thank you.
One of the more cohesive bands, and they wrote fantastically good songs. It's more than just having someone with that vocal range, with that charisma. They had a lot more. That was a lot of it, but they definitely had a lot more going on than just that.
But you see, the problem with Brian May are things like in the middle, not in the middle, at the end of We Will Rock You, which is genius a cappella, except for the percussion. The boom, 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 boom. And then it closes with a gratuitous guitar solo. It's a great guitar solo, but it doesn't belong in that song.
I find it hard to even think of that song without it, though.
In fact, I created a mix in which, first of all, the song's way too short. It's like 1:45 or something. So I looped it so that it became... double at length minus 10 seconds, because what I did was I cut out the guitar solo and just ended it with another cut-in of the boom, boom, boom. It's much more powerful.
You know, I like those songs, but honestly, even on that album, my favorite song is probably more Sheer Heart Attack on the News of the World album.
That's a great album. That's a great song, sorry. And the cover by Frank Kelly Frias.
I haven't heard that. You got to remember.
No. The cover. The album cover.
Oh, the album cover. Right, right.
The drawing.
Sorry, I thought you
which was
somebody...
taken from Astounding Science Fiction.
Mm-hmm. Oh, we're getting back to the topic. All right.
but it's the album cover.
You know,
it is.
I know. But
Frank Kelly Frias did a cover for Astounding when it was still a pulp, before it became a
main. Yeah, I know. I've seen the original. It's just,
yeah, right.
It's
with a woman bleeding out.
Science fiction, because for me to be on the show talking about music, we're all in trouble. Because I'm the most musically illiterate person you know.
Oh, well, then you should make. Great, we can talk about it all night, and you'll make me look good.
Oh, I see. Okay. It's like anything.
I know about the...
I mean, I told you, but the last five concerts I've gone to have either been Pink Floyd or Roger Waters, and I see no reason to change that.
And neither do I. Also, because and for a simple reason, Zappa is dead.
This is true.
And
I noticed.
And now the Funkadelics are gone.
Mm.
That for me is a problem as well, because a Zappa and Funkadelics double feature. Oh my God, what better way could you spend a Halloween, right?
Hmm.
They George Clinton and Frank Zappa in duo were just one of the, and you wouldn't think it. Are you a Zappa fan at all?
A little bit, yeah.
I would think a little bit.
I love my
because
friends.
He's a real composer.
Yeah.
He's a real thing.
Yeah, whenever I think of Zappa, I think of just this one thing. This is a silly thing probably to think of. You've seen the classic poster of Frank Zappa where he's sitting on the toilet and he's kind of like leaning forward and his leg arm on his knees and like looking over at the camera.
Yep.
I had a friend who in his bathroom, and he had that on his door in his bathroom.
Yeah. Yeah, okay.
So when you actually sat on the toilet and like lean forward onto your knees and looked over at the door.
He could pretend he was Frank.
Looking back at you exactly. It was almost like you're basically mimicking his pose.
You know what? If that were the case, I would never defecate again. It would not. it would not be possible. I could not handle that in any way, shape, or form. I'd rather go out and watch 200 motels for again and again and again.
Well, let's not.
Which I have done.
Let's not go crazy.
I've still never seen Baby Snakes.
I haven't seen that one either.
Yeah, apparently, it's been emerging on obscure streaming channels of late.
Really?
Yeah. Hmm. So I'm actually on the lookout for it, although I've heard not a good thing about it.
No, it's you know it is. I mean, I don't know. That's like one of those eras of filmmaking that's hard to find on the streaming sites, isn't it? Like that era.
Hard to find. No. I don't go to the streaming sites. Don't have it. The place I go to is.
You cannot confirm or deny. Pirate Bay.
No, I don't go to Pirate Bay.
Oh, okay.
I will not use any kind of peer network services because, and listen to this carefully, those of you who listen to our hacker show, although I am sure that the person, Emmanuel Goldstein, who is the lead of the hacker show, oh, you know that name from 1984? Well, he's still au courant. Emmanuel Goldstein hosts that show, and he will tell you, don't do Pirate Bay. It's traceable.
Okay, well, I mean, I don't...
All Bitstream stuff is traceable, ultimately.
Okay.
I've heard interesting things about Usenet if you use a VPN.
Yeah, well, I mean, I always use a VPN. Well, I cannot confirm or deny that I know much about pirating videos, but...
Don't say pirating.
Hypothetically.
You know, pirating is uploading.
Yeah.
Viewing... I don't agree that viewing something that somebody else pirated is pirating.
Okay, fair enough. But
nonetheless, breaking copyright. If you were the kind of horrible, aberrant human being that would break a copyright, yeah.
I would.
And by the way, this is WBAI in New York City. Yeah, sorry, go on.
I would not do it for anything that would be easy. I would do it for the kind of movies that you couldn't find and nobody actually has available. For example, a movie like I've seen recently, hypothetically I've seen recently, Looking for Mr. Goodbar with Diane Keaton from late Not available anywhere.
Really?
Not. I don't even.
I wonder why.
I don't even think I got a DVD.
Actually, either. A lot. Yeah, I got a VHS. I know
you got
that.
A VHS, but never got a DVD, as far as I know.
Or a Laserdisc. Yeah.
No, definitely didn't get that.
Yeah.
So it's not available. It's literally.
Come to think of it, there's a whole lot of Diane Keaton movies, not counting the Woody Allen Diane Keaton movies.
Yeah, those are available.
Yeah, but what's hard to find, for example, would be, oh, come on, the John le Carré, which was remade with Florence Pugh.
I need more information than that.
The woman who is being run by both the Arabs and Israelis as a spy against each other. It was both a movie about 20 years ago, and it was a TV series a year ago. Florence Pugh, who since then was nominated for an Academy Award in Little Women, and is about to literally kick rump by playing Black Widow's sister in the forthcoming blockbuster.
Interesting.
But in the meantime, just in case anybody wondered whether she could act, was opposite Anthony Hopkins and King Lear in a BBC production about 8 months ago. But outside of that, you know, she's a fly by night.
Yeah, I'm it's impressive.
I've
seen the trailer for Black Widow, so I think I imagine I've
well,
seen
if,
her.
Well, if you've seen the third trailer, is the one that's more her.
The first two don't
really show her.
I watch trailers every once in a while when it's like not too difficult to track hunt them down, but I will watch a comic book movie, but I'm not really into the comic book movies as such. They're enjoyable. Oh God, I'm not going to go Scorsese here, but they're kind of enjoyable.
No. I love comic book movies, and I agree with Scorsese. So there.
Ah, okay. Because I don't want to get
the only disagreement that I have with Scorsese is the implication that they're not worth watching. But they are not.
Did he really make that implication, or did he just say it's just not my thing?
Later on, he corrected course.
Okay.
You know, the first time out was he was being interviewed about 1,000 things in the space of 20 minutes.
Somebody
said, you know, what did you think of, like, Endgame or blah, blah, blah? And he said, well, that's not cinema. You know what? It isn't. He's right.
Mm.
That doesn't make it a bad movie. Movies are not necessarily cinema. Cinema is a definite claim to a kind of a work of art.
Sure.
And for the most part, comic book movies don't reach that height. And the ones that try.
They're trying to.
Some do.
Two of them.
Name them. Let's see if we agree.
The Dark Knight and Joker.
Okay. I haven't seen the Joker. Or Joker is really the proper title.
Joker.
Not quite my thing.
Basically Taxi Driver with face makeup, pretty much.
Exactly. And I'm a huge Joaquin Phoenix fan. Mm. But his best movie, my favorite movie of his, let me rephrase that, is Her.
I actually have not seen that.
It is a highly underrated film. I thoroughly recommend it. If you want to see real science fiction cinema, see Her.
Oh, I can think of a couple others.
I'm sure there are a couple of others.
Just recently, did you see Aniara?
Not yet, but I've heard wonderful things.
I might be the only, at this moment, I might be the only person I know who's actually seen the movie.
Dan Persons reviewed it for my show.
Oh, did he? Did he like it?
Yes, he did.
I wouldn't say that he
agree on a lot of stuff, but he has the sense of cinema that you have. But he also, I mean, he was also editor Ciné Fantastique, which means that he doesn't mind a fanish movie.
But, you know, I was actually having a conversation with a friend of mine a couple of days ago, and he was telling me about a story he was writing that was very similar to what goes on in Ariana, so I mentioned it to him. And I told him it was available streaming online on the Hulu. And
one service I don't get.
It's good. I mean, if
I initially refused because it was co-owned by Fox.
It was much better when they had the Criterion Collection, because then it was really worthwhile to have Hulu.
But then they went to Filmstruck, which was the best streaming service of all time, which is why it lasted under 2 years.
Yeah, and now they have something else, don't they?
Now there's simply the Criterion streaming service, which costs almost double what Filmstruck cost. And with Filmstruck, you got the entire Criterion collection, including Hour of the Wolf, and you got the Best of Turner Classic Movies, and you got the commentaries.
But now you don't get out of that.
Right.
No. Well, I still would like a password if somebody would like to back it up.
You didn't say that on the radio, did you? Oh, you would enjoy one if that would happen, but it would be wrong.
Yes. Yes.
Let's be clear on that.
Although I would point out that there is no possible way that all these streaming services don't know that most people share passwords and trade passwords back and forth. There's no possible way they don't know it.
They know it, but they don't appreciate it. After all, the better ones give you like 4 accounts. Mm-hmm. That you can use on one paid account. And if you figure that because I have a Netflix account, I can share that legally with 3 other people, you know, at a certain point, come on, that's fair.
Yeah. But, okay, here's another science fiction film that I really appreciated. I think I underwatched. Did you see Vanishing Waves?
No, I've never heard of it.
It's, I believe, a Lithuanian or an Estonian film. It's from about 4 years ago. And I really like it. I actually saw it. It was one of the very first things I saw when I first came to New York from Boston. And is the streaming not even on right now?
It was on until this very moment.
Uh-oh.
Because, of course, I had to authenticate a password. Broadcast paused, resume. And now we are streaming again.
Okay.
All ooh, right. Hello.
Hi.
Some very, very turn up volume. Person whose initials are KI. I don't like to say the name of people who are in chat mode.
Okay.
The volume problem is the fact that what you are watching is a phone camera that's about 6 feet away from my subject, and you're not actually hearing the radio feed into the phone. If you think that this is actually a radio show, which, come to think of it, it is, the thing I recommend most is going to wbai.org, spelt wbai.org.
Yeah.
But you know what I will do? Because I can get away with this. There we go.
How's my skin?
Not as bad as mine. Okay. But I'm not the one on camera. This is pretty good. This is a decent angle, and the microphone isn't blocking your face.
Okay, that's good.
Which is a rare occurrence. So please, KI, let me know if this is now better. And if it's not good enough, may I suggest that you aim your web browser at wbai.org and think of this as a radio show instead of a Facebook event.
And I'm pretty sure I have a great face for radio, so that'll work.
People always use that line.
I know.
One week I will go without hearing that.
I walked into a radio station I felt I had to say.
Three guys walk into a radio station. And
three of them will say that joke.
Yeah.
I think it's like you have to, because otherwise
you don't.
Security was going to come in and throw me out if I didn't say it at least once within the first hour.
I'm the security here.
Okay.
I'm the insecurity here. Wait, never mind.
All right, but anyway.
At any rate,
yes,
I have successfully accomplished half of what I need to do.
Okay.
Keep.
So the stream is working. So
but now I have to share the stream.
Ah, so I just got to make sure not to pick my nose,
radio.
Which I never do.
Okay, excuse me. Coronavirus, don't pick your nose. Oh, I was going to play my Chris Lavin song, and I will shortly.
Okay. All right. But no, the movie, it's the movie I was talking about, Vanishing Waves. It's I saw it at the Cinema Village, the ones over by the Strand. And it was one of the first films I saw when I first got to New York. And I don't find it a perfect film, but I find there's so much to like in it. So many good things about this film. And it seems like it, when it came over here, it just kind of like went thud. Didn't really have any effect in the American market at all. And I can't really explain why that is. It's just one of those things that happens. Like everyone's Rob is a great film or some film I've seen that I think is fantastic. It seems like I'm the only person who's ever seen it.
I don't find it a perfect film, but I find there's so much to like in it. So many good things
about this
film.
Seen a lot of movies because film used to be...
It seems like...
Before we came back to writing, film used to be my thing. And...
Why haven't you written film?
I have written films.
Ah, why hasn't the films you've written been produced?
I made my own film.
Ooh, there's a thought.
Yeah.
And what was that?
2009, 2010, I made a feature-length film on my own dime. It's not science fiction, though. It was...
Oh, God forbid. Well, then you're off the show. Forget it.
Well, I've done science fiction since. You can't do science fiction in the independent film scene very often. Basically, you can do Primer, and that's about it. There's not
Yeah, right.
Because it's just not enough money, and if you try...
Primer is not the worst movie ever made.
Primer is very good. I like Primer a lot.
Yeah, same here.
And I like the one he made after it, the...
Oh, God.
I can't remember what it's called at the
moment. Yeah, now I'm blanking.
But... No, I mean, now I'm all about the writing and not about the filmmaking. And I'm...
But you do more than writing.
Professionally, to pay the bills, I work on... commercial, corporate,
he made after
and
the,
documentary, documentary
oh
videos.
Oh, God.
As an
I can't remember what it's called. At the
yeah,
moment.
Now I'm blanking. Right, and off air, I asked you the difference, but let's not get into that.
No, I mean,
the assistant editor enables the editor.
Basically does everything.
Because the editor has so much
writing.
On their hands.
Yes.
I do all the things.
That they can use an assistant.
To do all the things so they can focus on doing the creative things.
Documentary team.
Organizing the footage. Putting in the project, exporting things, all that kind of thing. So
right,
the editor
and off air, I asked you
continue to focus on things that are more important for them to be focused on.
The assistant editor enables
and,
the editor.
Basically does everything.
Because
the editor has so much on their
all about the writing now. I haven't even tried
to
write a script.
That they can use an assistant.
Yeah, to do all the things so they can focus on doing the creatives and the creative things.
I'm happy. Okay.
Organizing the footage.
I mentioned this to you earlier.
Exporting.
Do you know what the most common...
Yes, but now we're on the air.
What is the most common conversation amongst filmmakers?
Funding.
Where's the money coming from? Who's got the money? How much money?
Producers.
How much money did that cost you to make? How much money are you going to raise for that? Who do you know has any money? Do you think your producer would be interested in looking at my... It's always about the money.
Can you get a Wednesday slot to open?
Yeah. Always about... All the conversations, like 90, and I'm just as guilty of doing this when I was involved in film as all the people I was talking with. The conversations are always about money. It was never about the film itself, with some rare exceptions. I had some friends in Boston who I could always talk film with, and I always loved talking film with, but they were rare. Majority of the people were always talking about money because it was so hard to get the money. Making film is incredibly expensive, even with digital video, where you don't have to buy 1,200 feet of film that'll only last you about 30 minutes.
But that's why the powers that be invented, you know, the Toronto Film Festival, the just-canceled South by Southwest, and Sundance, and all that. So
who do nothing more than just distribute films that already have distribution deals.
Well, they show movies to people that can distribute and can fund already made movies. For the most part, there don't seem to, I'm not aware. Are there any places where a person can say, "I haven't made my film. I would like to make my film. Please fund me"?
There are financial resources for those kind of things.
Resources, yes, but I mean a venue.
A venue that does it specifically.
A venue, aside from the famous, is it the Blacklist, which actually
is a white list.
We have to explain to listeners.
The Blacklist is a place where you can, for a nominal fee, put your film script on their server, And it is guaranteed to be, I think it was, last time I looked at it, guaranteed to be read by two people in the professional film business.
At least, yeah. Before this iteration of The Blacklist, mm-hmm. it was a real thing where people were just passing around paper scripts saying, everybody passed on this, and yet it's a great movie.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was not a rumor mill, but it was a resource for producers that were looking for material that was generally non-commercial, but could generate buzz.
Mm-hmm.
Nowadays, it's more formalized, but it used to be, which is how it got the name, The Blacklist. If they created it today, they wouldn't call it The Blacklist. It would be, you know, for women filmmakers, The Pink List. It would, you know.
Yeah, whatever.
It would be whatever, exactly.
But it's just...
But the name goes back to the 70s,
mm-hmm.
before it was a place where you could log in and read something that was never made by Lee Brackett.
Yeah, but that's the thing.
Name a favorite scriptwriter of mine.
It's the difference between the mediums of writing and the means of filmmaking. Filmmaking is just so cost prohibitive for like 99% of everybody involved. It's cost prohibitive. You can't really do it.
No longer.
It's easier now. You can make a film. You can make a film with this phone right here, and a very shareable version.
You can. Steven Soderbergh has done just that.
And it could be very good. Well, let's not get into exactly how much post-production money he actually had to spend to make that actually watchable.
Well, yeah. But he's done about two or three. I think Logan Lucky was done on his phone.
Well, another example was Robert Rodriguez when he made Desperado. El Mariachi.
Yes.
Everybody's, he made that film for $20,000 on film. Isn't it amazing? Yeah, do you know how much money the studio had to spend to fix up the post-production to make it watchable?
Mm-hmm.
It ended up being probably like a $3 million film.
But $3 million is bupkis today.
Yeah, that was 30 years ago.
Even then, that was starting to be...
Yeah, and that was a different era where you still could be an indie filmmaker and break in.
Right.
When Soderbergh came out and Tarantino, for example, or
Greta Gerwig, Noam Baumbach.
Oh, that was the Mumblecore. That was like 10 years later.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to think of his name. The guy did Slacker. He just did Boyhood.
Oh.
Slacker. I love Slacker. Amazing film.
I love Slacker. It's bizarre.
But that was basically...
Some of those people then get... I mean, the amazing thing, though, is that some of the people who were in that oeuvre for a while, who were doing that thing, nowadays, remarkably, and this is where I challenge you in terms of comic book movies, somebody like Taika Waititi is given the opportunity to make a $200 million movie, as is Rian Johnson. These are not people that ever thought that they would ever have a budget of more than $10 million to make them. They would have loved $10 million on their films.
I think in some ways they probably would wish they still had only $10 million budgets.
Yes, absolutely, except that I don't know about Mr. Johnson, but Taika Waititi I'm making one for them, and then I'm making two for me, and then I'm doing one for them.
Well, that's the smart way to do it. That's why actors have been doing it for decades.
Yeah, but now it's actually coming true for directors and what they nowadays call creators. And this is what Waititi, you know, to go from Guardians of the Galaxy 2, or Thor. No, Thor was his...
Yeah, he did Thor 3.
Well, no, he's doing Guardians of the Galaxy 4, I think. Which is really also Thor 5.
Mm.
And he's doing Thor 3. But Thor 2... he's doing Thor 4. Hard to say that.
Talking about comic book movies again. Okay.
Indeed. But between those, making Jojo Rabbit. Have you seen it?
I haven't seen it yet, no.
Do it.
I intend to.
Yeah.
Soon.
It's good. It's difficult. It's not, you know, everybody...
Oh, I don't have a problem with difficult films. That's not a problem.
Then you won't
have... Depends on the difficulty. If it's difficult because it's technically bad, I can't...
No. It's difficult for content. And I don't mean obscenity or violence or anything. It's difficult because your mind is moving in one direction and then the rug gets pulled out from under you.
I like that kind of thing.
And yeah, but it's not fun. In a Tom Stoppard play, when that happens, it's usually like, oh man, that blew my mind. That was wonderful. But in this movie, it's like, oh my, I never expected anything like that to happen.
Hmm.
And I can't discuss it any further.
Okay. Well, I'll keep a lookout for it.
Without doing a content disclaimer. It's sort of like a Frank Langwich disclaimer.
Yeah.
But it's sort of like, the movie you're about to hear us discuss will be spoiled. If you don't like to hear reveals, please tune out.
Okay.
I like that. By the way, I once used the word spoiler in an interview with Michael Bishop, the writer. And he says, I prefer to think of it as a reveal. And I think, yeah.
Depends on the intent behind it.
Well, in one of his books, which is what we were discussing, a 250-page book, the intent of the book is like goes topsy-turvy on you on about page 75.
Hmm.
And that, so it doesn't, it's not the end of the movie. It's not she's a guy. You know, it's not the crying game. But it is a reveal that if you didn't know that going in, the reveal, it wouldn't blow your mind the way that the author intended it to do.
Hmm.
And that's fair. And Jojo Rabbit, it doesn't have a spoiler. It has a reveal.
Okay, well, it's definitely one of the films I intend to watch at some point.
It's well made.
I don't get to the theater much anymore because one of the things when I lived in Boston, I wasn't in video editing. I was a film projectionist in Boston. So one of the things that a lot of movie theaters have is an unwritten agreement with the other movie theaters in the given city, whereas I could go see films at other movie theaters for free, provided I didn't go during their peak hours times.
Right.
So when I was a projectionist at this theater in Somerville, Massachusetts, I took advantage of that and literally went to go see a movie a week for 12 years. And I did a movie a week for about 5 years in college, so about 17, 18 years watching one movie a week in the theater. And I went to the Kendall Square a lot. Kendall Square is one of my favorites, the Coolidge Corner Theater in Coolidge Corner, Braintree.
Yeah.
And the Brattle Theater.
It was Quincy, but Braintree, I'll take your
word. No, it's not Quincy. No.
Okay.
I couldn't get to Quincy. Quincy was a bit far. So I went to...
I thought they were like next to each other, Quincy and Braintree.
What
do I know about Massachusetts? I don't know. You know what I know in Massachusetts? I know A, Boston, and B, where to go birding.
Fair enough.
That's what I know about Massachusetts.
Well, you're missing it, or you
for great lobster, I go to Connecticut.
But okay, but anyway, so
just came from there.
But when I get to New York, I wasn't a projectionist anymore, and I have a hard time grasping that paying for tickets because I went so many years without ever paying for a ticket.
Yeah,
I mean, you think about it: 12 years, one movie a week, 52 times 12. That's mm-hmm. how many movies I saw for free.
Well, here at WBAI, we had a movie reviewer by the name of Paul Wunder.
Hmm.
Who maybe saw, when he wasn't teaching high school, he's passed on now, when he wasn't teaching high school, saw an average of two movies a day. He was a prolific viewer, and he was arguably, in the years that he was active, so prolific that Jay Leno said, who is this Paul Wunder guy anyway? What the hell is WBAI? Because Paul loved bad movies. He loved movies like Dr. Butcher, M.D.
I'm not making that title up. No, I know you're not.
And the tagline of the movie is, "The doctor is insane."
Yeah, I just, there's only so much of those movies.
And so Paul would be quoted on that. But they would call the switchboard operator and Paul, you know, to get that BAI in order to get a quote for a movie, right? Mm. And then they'd say, "Hey, the new John Carpenter film." John Carpenter. And, you know, what do you think? And to the point where the switchboard operator, Fred Geobold, made up the damn quote, and Paul would open up the paper and say, "I didn't say that." And he would say, "No, you were stoned and asleep." And, you know, so, except in one occasion, where Paul, specifically a John Carpenter film, I don't recall which. I think it was like John Carpenter's Vampires or something like that. Paul said, "Best John Carpenter film ever." And he saw the thing in the paper and he went off the deep end. It was like, "Oh my God, no, there are at least 7 John Carpenter films that are better. It's his best film in, 5 years." He was considered a demon by serious film critics, but he, you know, it wasn't that he loved bad movies, because he was about the only critic who said, "There's this movie by a guy named Neil Jordan called The Crying Game."
Oh, okay.
You know, that you should see. And if it wasn't for Paul really getting behind that film and getting quoted in the papers, that film would have ended up as another quiet indie film that nobody would have ever heard of. And it's a great movie.
Yeah. There's a lot of great movies that never get anywhere.
Exactly.
There's only so much time.
Yeah, but Paul would try to root them out. Dan Persons does that as well, but my reviewer. But the problem is that he moved from New York to Philly. And there is, I think the city council in Philly passed a law saying we do not show good movies here. And the guy works in a cinema. But at this point, you know, he's just sent me an email saying, "I'm only going to be covering streaming stuff for a while because it's recommended don't spend too much time in a theater with more than 60 people.
Yeah, that's kind of where we're at right now.
Grumble.
I know, we're all grumbling.
The next New York Review of Science Fiction reading is scheduled for April 7th. The reader is Veronica Roth, who has never written anything in her life that has not been a number one New York Times bestseller and a over $100 million movie. Mm. Now, I don't ask you to judge those movies. The names aren't even coming to mind at the moment because you've heard of them.
I've heard of them, but I wasn't judging. I wasn't going to comment.
But her new novel is a really, really good novel for adults and everybody. And she's scheduled for the New York Review of Science Fiction readings on April 7th. And it's a guaranteed crowd, please. I mean, we will, if we go ahead, we will be very, very crowded. Mm. I have to talk to the publisher, Houghton Mifflin, Harcourt, and John Joseph Adams, who I didn't know was a John Joseph Adams book when I took this on, which is almost a conflict of interest because I work for John Joseph Adams. Yes. I'm the host of Lightspeed Magazine podcast.
Someday I hope to be rejected by John Joseph Adams.
Not in a literary sense, anyway.
No, in a literary sense, yeah.
Yeah.
I pride myself in the fact that I've been rejected by all the great magazines in the country right now.
And he's got at least two of them.
Yes.
Because he's Nightmare Magazine and Hitchhiker. Jesus God.
Yeah, I don't...
He has the Hitchhiker's... what's the name of it? Guide to the Geeks? That he does with David Barr Kirtley through Wired magazine.
Yeah,
it's one of the more popular podcasts in the world. The Geek's Guide to the Galaxy. Thank you.
Oh, I see. Okay.
No Hitchhikers Need Apply. That's also a John Joseph Adams project.
Yeah.
But I don't work on that. I work on Lightspeed and Nightmare. Yeah.
It's a good man. I love reading stuff in Lightspeed.
The podcast coming out tomorrow is top-notch, read by Stefan Rudnicki. It's a really, really lovely piece of prose with some very funny and poignant moments. Mm-hmm. It's almost a poem. It's a prose poem. And there are such things as prose poems.
Yeah. Of course there are.
Yeah, this is one. And it's nice and short. You know, excluding my introduction, it runs 18 minutes.
Yeah. I have to get more into podcasts. I don't do the podcast as much, listen to podcasts as much as I should.
There's only so much time. But there are a few in science fiction.
Hmm. But that's the thing. Because
worth hearing.
Because I spent so many years specifically doing film and indie film, and not necessarily even science fiction indie film, I spent a lot of time away from science fiction. Even what I was reading wasn't, you know, I was reading a lot of non-science fiction stuff. So I know it happens. But
I'm actually back to reading science fiction for the first time in a long time.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I'm rereading Dune. And when I say Dune, I mean the books by Frank Herbert, none of the sequels, because I'm aware, very aware, hyper aware of the remake.
Yeah.
That is going to come out very soon.
It's a Dune Take 3.
Yes. Right. Because there was the sci-fi.
The sci-fi series, I thought.
Children of Dune was not horrific. Dune was pretty bad. Mm-hmm. It concentrated a little bit more on the early parts of the book, which the David Lynch movie did not.
Well, it might have in the nine-hour version.
Seven and a half.
But
I had a hold. I had in my hot little hands. I had the original script by David Lynch.
He was just the wrong person to do that film.
He wasn't. He did.
In the studio? Yeah, he was the wrong person.
I don't know about in the studio. The only problem I really had with his film was the portrayal of Baron Harkonnen. The rest of it.
Too over the top?
Yeah, too over the top. And because, I mean, if you read the book, what makes Baron Harkonnen evil? And I mean, he doesn't do anything that Duke Leto Atreides isn't willing to do.
Hmm.
The difference is that he lusts after his gorgeous nephew.
Yeah.
It's homophobic. It is thoroughly homophobic.
Well, it's also a 40-year-old book.
It was homophobic then.
Yeah, but homophobia was not exactly it.
It was in vogue.
I wouldn't say in vogue, but it wasn't particularly uncommon.
But as the focal point as to what makes this guy a bad guy, and it's primarily his homophobia, there we've got a problem.
Among others, among Dune. I mean, Dune also still has the major white savior complex going on.
Well, that's a whole other thing. And that is, by the way, what this new book by Veronica Moth. Roth, not Moth, oh God help me, Veronica Roth is about. It's about five former messiahs from various adventures like Dune, and it's 10 years after.
Interesting.
That's the premise. And, you know, so take a little Umbrella Academy, a little Dune, a little this, a little that. But Dune is the first major, knowingly major white savior story. And it's not as bad as Children of Dune. Not, sorry, Dune Messiah, which doubles down. Because what happens is, yes, Paul Atreides hands the reins of power back to the Fremen, the Arabs of the story.
Yeah.
But the second book is, and you know that these people are not capable of running their own society. So the first one is white man comes in to save the day, right, Moana? you know, and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
The second book is, and he was right to do it, because they could not have done it themselves. I'm reading it.
Very Rudyard Kipling, if you think about it.
Yeah, but 100 years after, well, 80 years after, yeah, Rudyard Kipling. And even then, Rudyard Kipling's heroes are anti-heroes. They're rogues.
Mm.
They're not nice people, and they don't pretend to be. If you watch the movie version, for example, of Gunga Din, which isn't pure Rudyard Kipling in terms of the poem that Kipling wrote, but if you read other Kipling, you realize these characters, Douglas Fairbanks, Cary Grant, and all that in the movie, are extremely Kipling. They're just not the Kipling of Gunga Din. I mean, the best one of them all is, and the one that is truest to Kipling, is the John Huston movie, The Man Who Would Be King, which is, I think, a wonderful movie. And it takes the messianic message that Kipling was putting forth and says...
It's like mid-50s?
No, it's like the 80s.
Oh, 80s. I'm sorry. I'm thinking of...
Michael Caine and Sean Connery.
All right. I'm thinking of the wrong movie.
Michael Caine and Sean Connery filmed on location.
Okay.
In the subcontinent. It's a... And Christopher Plummer.
Hmm.
If you do not know this movie, watch it, because it is everything that you blame Kipling for, and it accepts it as this is who Kipling was. This is what he was really writing about, and it does not see it as a good thing.
No, that could be interesting.
Oh, it's a great movie. It really is. It's outside of the first film version of The Jungle Book. No, it's not animated. It's
I know.
Yeah, I know that you know. But like my listeners last week, when I mentioned Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, they say, oh, I still have a copy of that on my bookshelves. It's a radio show. The book came 3 years later.
See if I remember the chronology. Radio show, first series of radio shows...
First series of first radio book. Shows. The TV first series. Book comes out almost concurrent to the second series of radio shows.
And the TV show came out after the first book.
Right, but not long after.
And then the third series of the radio show, then the rest
Before that, the play.
Oh, I don't remember the play.
I don't think it's ever been done in the U.S.
Well, it's...
But it was, well, it's all over.
Doesn't really count this then,
is,
does it?
There's this place called the United Kingdom. They saw it a few times.
For now, there's a place called the United Kingdom.
No, oh, God,
yes.
Gonna
happen.
Yeah, really.
But
really, you're so correct.
No, it was, as I was telling, I remember listening to the Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy radio show. I know.
By the way, listeners, if you liked the first fit that I broadcast last week, know that the second fit is currently available at bbc.com, and they're for, you know, the 42nd anniversary.
Oh, right, right.
They are slowly rolling out all of the first series. Mm. And the first 5 episodes of that first series is some of the best radio ever done. The 6th episode, meh, but the first 5 are genius.
Yeah, so I mean, that's really where I first started getting into science fiction. Well, the early science fiction for me is watching 2001: A Space Odyssey when I was 5 years old, which was very first.
So we're not that far apart, because I was about 13.
I didn't watch it in the movie theater when I was 5 years old.
No. I'm talking about seeing it at the Cinerama Theater on 7th
Avenue.
Well,
I've seen it multiple times in theaters since.
Cinerama?
In 70mm, yeah.
No. 70mm and Cinerama are two different things.
Okay.
70mm is not 35mm or 16mm. Cinerama is not 70mm. Cinerama is about 160 degrees around you.
Okay, well, I don't think there was any place that had the capabilities of showing that.
No longer, no. There were only about 8 movies ever made in Cinerama.
Okay.
The
But the first time I saw 2001, I was 5 years old. This was the first movie that we had on VHS when we got our very first VHS player.
Oh my God!
And
no offense, but
yeah, I know.
It's a small screen.
Well, I was five. I was small too. But this is back when you didn't leave your VCR hooked in all the time. Remember, this is back when you had to unscrew the things in the back of the antenna and stick the wires in and curl it around the screw, then tighten it back up, and that's how you hooked your VCR into your TV.
Yeah, what is it I just saw?
It took my dad most of the night to set that up. So we didn't even get to start watching the movie until about 9 p.m. And me being five years old, I fell asleep.
Of course.
But
especially because the dialogue of the first 22 minutes...
Oh, I had no problem with that. I love.
No, there is no dialogue.
I just fell asleep because I was young. The very next day, that forced my dad to set the VCR up again so I could watch the movie again.
Right.
In the middle of the afternoon, and it's been my first favorite movie of my entire life. I got that from my dad. My dad's always been a big
fan. Is that because it's one of the best movies ever made?
That probably has a lot to do with it.
Oh, okay. Just wondering.
And on the other side,
by the way, everybody, in case you didn't know, there is a Stanley Kubrick exhibit currently at the Museum of...
Moving Image?
The Moving Image, thank you, in what used to be Kaufman Astoria Studios in Queens. It's there through June.
It's actually there through July, actually.
July. You have been warned. And they do either 70 millimeter, or in one case, I think they did a Cinerama screening of 2001.
Yeah, every Saturday at noon.
Yeah, and
I'm definitely going to make it over there at one
point. If you have never seen this movie on a big screen, you have never seen this movie. This isn't just like Star Wars with the Imperial Cruiser coming over your head. Kubrick was a visionary. Yeah. And he had a very, very definite series of circumstances under which he believed you would watch that film, and that is the way it should be seen the first time. But you know what? I don't even like to watch it today on my 40-inch monitor, no matter how good the Criterion copy or whatever. Although I do like the commentaries.
I never listened to commentaries in movies. I just watch the movies.
I listen to the commentaries after I know the film.
Yeah, I might look into reading up or watching like some.
It's like reading an article about a movie after you've seen it.
I'd rather not be distracted.
Right, but this is after you've seen it.
Yeah.
That's my view, is watch the movie, and then if it means something to you, you can go back a month later and watch it with the commentary. And that's not watching the movie. That's hearing the commentary with the movie as a supplement. By the way, let me tell listeners that even though I have my phone perfectly set up this week,
I keep shifting.
No. The Wi-Fi signal keeps shifting.
Ah.
And it is constantly trying to reconnect. And so we may have to give up on the Facebook Live portion, you know, and just go with... And last
yeah, I can't pick
it's,
my
it's
nose
back
in.
Right now.
Okay.
Last week with Anthony Sloan as my guest, he said, Oh, God. No, it's not filming. It's playing back now.
Okay.
I think we need to stop.
All right.
The Facebook Live, and what we suggest you do is turn on your radio to 99.5 FM in New York or to WBAI.org and then look at your radio very, very carefully. If it takes enhanced substances to make the radio move, that's your call.
Yeah.
I don't necessarily
recommend
it.
So this is
off
completely now?
I've turned it off.
Okay.
Yeah, because it was showing 10 seconds, dropping out for 5 seconds, on for 10 seconds, and all that stuff. My God, it's after 2 a.m.
I know. I haven't even talked about anything I've written yet.
No, so why don't we take a musical break?
Okay.
And think of this piece of music by Chris Lavin as Christine Lavin, thank you very much, from her album Cold Pizza for Breakfast. And think of it as a public service announcement, because there are some people that are doing namastes and some people that are doing Vulcan hand greetings. Does that have a name, the Vulcan hand greeting?
Just Vulcan greeting.
Just the Vulcan greeting. Some will just say the Leonard Nimoy or whatever. But
he did come up with it. If I remember it right, he came up with it himself, didn't he?
Oh,
it's the nerve pinch that he came up
with. Yes.
Because he was too hungover to get into a fight scene that day.
I don't know about that. But the story he told was that he borrowed it. Mm. Yes, he came up with it for popular culture. But he wasn't the person who first invented it. He used it from somewhere, okay. And he wasn't absolutely certain of the source. But, you know, he saw it, and he continued to use it. The nerve pinch, I think he invented.
Yeah, if I remember the story right, he was supposed to have a fight with Kirk in that scene, but he either didn't think it was right for his character, or he was too hungover to do it that day, so he suggested the nerve pinch thing instead.
Yeah. Don't think of Nimoy as the kind of person who gets hungover a whole lot. Shatner, on the other hand, and DeForest Kelly.
Yeah.
Well, actually, I've seen DeForest Kelly drink in real life.
And you live to tell the tale.
Well, I was the cashier at the restaurant. So there.
But McDoohan on the... Oh, God.
And McDoohan... No,
it's amazing. We could actually name them by their actual names.
He didn't drink. He used a straw, you know. Mm. but, you know, what were you expecting from him? The problem is that if you just spoke to the man, which I did, boy, did he have an accent. I would say Chicago for the most part.
McDoohan?
Yeah.
That's right. Okay, fine.
Sorry, he's... Born in this country? No, maybe not.
He's Canadian, actually, because I remember...
Is he Canadian?
He was... I'm not sure. Okay, the one thing I do know about him is that he actually was at Normandy.
Yes.
And he lost part of his finger.
Yes.
I assume...
But I don't know if he was born in Scotland or not.
I don't think he fought...
I don't think he was.
He was... I think he might have been Canadian. Well, Shatner's Canadian. I know that.
Shatner's Canadian, yes.
Nimoy's from Boston.
Originally, but when he was a child, he moved to New York, where his father ran a furniture store in Queens.
Doohan, I believe, might have been Canadian. I'm not sure, though.
I'm not sure at all.
But anyways, we were going to do...
At any rate, he didn't have that accent.
No.
At all, Doohan. Anyway.
I knew it wasn't a real Scottish accent because I could understand it.
Exactly. I mean, how many people... You ever listen to David Tennant talking?
This is the thing.
He does nature documentaries. Earth.
I went to Glasgow when I was... I did two semesters on exchange in a school in England. I used that as a springboard to go various places in Europe. One of the places I went was Glasgow. And the thing I found out about people from Scotland is they have two accents. They have one when it's just Scots around, and they have one... that for when there's like somebody who's not Scottish around. And the reason I know that is because
when they want to be heard.
Because I generally didn't look like an American, because every place I went, nobody knew I was American until I opened my mouth. Mm-hmm. So I'd go up to Scotland when I was in Glasgow, and people would just come up to me and start talking to me like I was Scottish. And I just remember this one time in a bar, and this guy comes up and says something to me. I just kind of, 9:30? I just took a guess that he was asking me what time it was. Mm-hmm. And he just looked at me, oh, I'm sorry, I thought you were Scottish, I'll talk slower.
Yeah, right. Well, and that's nothing compared to the Welsh.
Yeah.
You know, it's like...
they have a whole language without any vowels.
Well, exactly. But also, just to hear it, I mean, there are now two TV shows that are actually filmed in Welsh and English.
Yeah. One of them is a crime show my mom is very fond of.
Yes. Well, it's a current show. It's a crime show. Well, the second season ended about 6 months ago. It stars...
Oh, this must be a new one. There's another Welsh crime show that's been going for at least 3 or 4 seasons.
No. This Keeping Faith, starring Eve Miles.
I don't know
Better known as Short... You know, I know Eve Miles. The woman in Torchwood. If you are an Eve Miles fan, and oh my, I am an Eve Miles fan, she had to learn the Welsh. She could film the English.
I thought she was Welsh.
Yes. Does that mean that she speaks the language?
There's more.
Not all Jews speak Yiddish. You know what I'm
saying? There's more chance that she speak Welsh than I do.
Slightly more, not much.
Okay.
Not much. Yes, she's Welsh. She had to learn her lines phonetically. So they would first film the English, and that's when she would get the understanding of the scene into the show. And then after she'd done the scene in English, she had been listening to a recording made by the director of the series, who would do all of her lines, and she would be in the shower listening to her lines in Welsh, learning them phonetically. Right, so that she could perform them right after having done the same scenes in English, and that's how that show ended up in Welsh. They weren't expecting a big thing for it, but became not just the number one show in Wales, but it was like number 5 in all the UK.
Hmm. Well, I'll have to look for it. It's also the way they filmed the Blue Angel, if I remember right.
Yes, I think so. Certainly Threepenny Opera.
But
same director. Isn't it?
Blue Angel is... the only name I can see is Fassbinder, and I know that's...
Jesus, Fassbinder?
That's not even close.
I mean, there's a separation of about 40 years.
Yeah, I know.
Dad, what kind of cineasts are we?
It's Murnau, isn't it?
No.
Murnau?
No, it's not Murnau. Pabst did Blue Angel.
Okay.
And therefore, he's not the same director.
Well, I haven't been into film class in like almost 20 years now, so give me a break.
I've never been in film class. I watch movies.
All right, fair enough.
But you know,
we both write science fiction.
I don't write science fiction.
And we haven't
fiction.
Actually talked about writing science fiction.
No, and we should do that right after this word from Christine Lavin here over WBAI New York.
Next person who hugs and kisses me and then says, I'm sick. Please see why I feel justified giving you one swift kick. If you're sick, you must not touch. I can't stress this point too much. I know you love everybody and everybody loves you. Doesn't mean we love your germs and your microbes too. What to do, what to do, what to do. Bring back the bow, starting right now. If you're sick and you touch me, kapow. Come on, sick people, bow. Bring back the bow, I'll show you how. You're thinking that looks easy, wow. Let's bring back the, but maybe bowing is not your style. There's other moves I behoove you to use if you're sick that won't get me riled. For instance, just adopt a serious look. Think Nixon when he said, I am not a crook. Then place your two palms together. Greet people like this next time you're under the weather. Namaste. That's all you say. And it's good if you can pretend to pray when you say namaste. Namaste. We'll keep the sick at bay. Chase colds away with a bold nama, maybe namaste. And bowing, for you are too formal. Here's something else you can try, just a bit more normal. If a sneezy person comes toward you with their lips all in a pucker, scream, get away from me, you sick lozenge sucker, or say namaste and bow. By now you know how. If you're sick and you touch me, kapow. Come on, sick people, bow. Bring back the bow. How now, brown cow? Let's all kowtow. Let's bring back if your head hurts, your belly aches. No hugs, no kisses, no handshakes. Starting here and now. Let's bring back, don't make me want to smack you. Let's bring back the bow. The knuckle tap is okay too.
We love you, Christine Lennon. We being me. But hey, you got what, 20 albums out there or something now? So we can say we, because obviously besides me and Vince Scalza and some others, we know that and for a while Dr. Demento, we know that you are an absolute wonderful genius songwriter with the tuning and sound of a Joni Mitchell and the lyrics of a Cole Porter. All right, and Chris, I've said that to your face and you blushed. I claim the credit of being the very first person to put Christine Lavin on the radio. It's a long story. No, I did nothing to make her famous. Vince Scalza did that. Mm. But I have every reason to believe it's because he either heard the show that I did with her or somebody gave him an air check of that program. And he is the one who made her famous. I don't care who. You think that song is topical? You think that song is like here and now? Yes. I mean, that album's like 15 to 20 years old, but I guess what comes around goes around, or the other way, because right now there's just way too much going around. You're tuned to listener sponsored non-commercial Pacifica Radio, New York City, WBAI, broadcasting at 99.5 FM, webcasting at WBAI.org, and giving up on Facebook Live for the second week in a row because it's just not working here. And I suspect the main reason for that is the crappy Wi-Fi signal on the third floor here at 388 Atlantic Avenue. My guest this morning on Hour of the Wolf is A.T. Sayre, S-A-Y-R-E, ask for it by name, and the moniker is Andrew, the byline is A.T. Is that fair enough?
That's fair enough. That's just for whatever reason, I've honestly never really liked my name. I just never really liked it.
What's the T?
Thomas.
Okay, so you like your surname?
My last name?
Yeah.
It's all right. I mean, it's an odd French spelling of an English word, so I'm not sure how exactly that happened. But,
okay.
No, my parents had seven children.
Whoa.
I know, Catholics. And each one of us has a biblical name. And, of course, my parents swear it was a coincidence.
My brother is Andrew. I am James. We are not Catholic. We're Jewish.
Well,
and those are biblical names.
Sort of. Yes, they are.
Well, if your name is Andrew, and his name is Andrew.
Andrew is the first apostle. James, I don't know what James was remarkable.
The First Testament. And witch hunting.
Yes. Charming.
In the worst episode of the current Doctor Who.
Oh, you're talking about King... Oh, yes, I read that episode.
Alan Cumming.
Oh, that's right.
What a waste of the brilliant talent of Alan Cumming.
I don't know. I kind of like that episode more than most of the other ones that season.
No, I'm the other way around. Mm-hmm. I thought that one was a dud. I liked the one that took place during the division between
India
and Pakistan.
That's exactly the one I was thinking of, too.
Yeah. And this current season, the new season of Doctor Who that just ended, I love Doctor Who.
It was better, yeah.
No.
No?
No. There was one episode, the something of the Jadoon, which brings back Jack Harkness and somebody else.
For a meaningless cameo, almost.
Yeah. because it was a, I loved it because it was a promise that at the end of the season, we were going to get back Captain Jack and this new doctor, this black woman doctor, who neither of whom had the knowledge of the other. And then they bring back that woman for like 30 seconds, and Jack ain't back. Yeah. And worst sin of all, for the first time in Whovian history, they ended on a cliffhanger.
What are you talking about? They've done it a couple of times.
No.
Name
one.
David Tennant's... The David Tennant just before Runaway Bride.
And what's the cliffhanger?
The Runaway Bride suddenly shows up in the TARDIS.
Oh, for God's sake. That's a 30-second lead-in to the next episode, which was a month later. It wasn't wait for a season to find out who this character is, who then didn't come back for another year.
Okay, the War Doctor intro.
Same deal. Same
that
deal.
That was like a year between the end of that, the Matt, that into that Matt Smith.
You know, I don't remember the exact chronology, but let's take sucker in the fact that when they finally... No, John Hurt was not in any episode but the one with the War Doctor. He only did one episode. There's no cliffhanger with the War Doctor that I remember.
Well, his introduction was in the last 30 seconds of the end of that season.
Oh, that could be. That could very well be. But again, it was only...
It was like several months until the 50th anniversary episode.
Yeah, which is the War Doctor episode, which, by the way, sorry, Stephen Moffat, was a lousy script. The Queen Elizabeth deal in the beginning, it takes up the first half hour of Matt Smith and David Tennant saying whose is longer in order to please this punk modern Queen Elizabeth. It was stupid, stupid, stupid. And then what do they do? The big deal is, let's bring back Gallifrey. What was this season about? Let's bring back Gallifrey. Well,
that's the thing about a lot of the Stephen Moffat's episodes. I mean, he started out strong, but about halfway through Matt Smith's run, he started turning into, most of his stories turned into this, what I call the Doctor is Magic premise.
You're right. You're right. But his first season with Matt Smith was brilliant. It was a great rom-com, you know, with the introduction of Amy and Rory and all that. And then the end with the Pandoricum and all that is hilarious. And it was brilliant writing, brilliant acting. Mm. And then after that, blah.
Okay.
You know, after that one season. But Stephen Moffat's best work was not when he was the showrunner. It's when he was writing for Russell Davis.
Yeah, probably.
Don't blink.
Oh, right. You're talking about that. I thought you were telling me not to blink. All right.
Well, I was.
I can blink if I want to.
Yes, you can.
It's a free country.
Don't blink. The episode Blink is, of New Who, arguably one of the best ever.
Yeah. I'd say so.
And also the one before the Doctor dances, that's a two-parter.
The two-parter at the end of Christopher Eccleston's run, yeah.
Yes, right.
The introduction of Jack Harkness.
Exactly, exactly. Those two episodes, which are both written by Moffat, are wonderful.
They are. They are pretty good.
They're very
definitely my favorite of the Ecclestons.
Yeah, and Eccleston was a great Who.
Yeah, it's a shame he didn't stick around longer.
He had issues.
Yeah, he's an actor. They always have issues.
Nah. As they say in the producers, have you ever eaten with one? But
You can tell the actors in our troupe by the glazed look that comes on their face whenever the conversation moves away from them.
That's good.
My mom used to have this book. It used to be this book in my house when I was growing up called The Portable Curmudgeon. And it's just a collection of
The title, I'm already there.
The collection is just basically an index of like famous curmudgeons' comments on various things by subject, and that's one of the ones that I can't remember who said it.
That's who cares?
There was a curmudgeon. I mean, there was great ones like what's one of the? I remember. I can't remember who said this one either. But someone said, "I just came back from Boston. I find it's the only thing to do when you're there." Or it was basically just like it was like a glossary index of all these various different subjects and all these famous smart alecky quotes on them.
What kind of fiction do you write, Andrew?
I write science fiction mostly, although might as well just call it speculative fiction because I'm not as good enough in science to be just a science fiction writer.
Yeah, although here mm-hmm. on Hour of the Wolf,
yes,
we use the Damon Knight definition of science fiction. And the Damon Knight definition of science fiction is what I'm pointing at.
Fair enough.
And by those, now I have it backwards. Mm. I'll say Lord of the Rings is the same genre as science fiction. It's really the other way around. Science fiction is fantasy. It's a specific type of fantasy
sure.
that follows certain rules, where fantasy is much less bound.
It's based in a fantastical extrapolation on physics and technology.
Right. Very well put. Very well put.
Yeah, that's pretty much most of what I do, although not exclusively. Actually, the last two stories I wrote were probably more along the lines of fantasy or paranormal,
oddly enough. But you see, that's still fantasy.
Mm-hmm.
And science fiction is actually all fantasy. But the marketing term that has gone around is science fiction.
Yeah.
It's a term created by publishers in order to help booksellers decide where this book belongs in the store.
True.
And thus is the history. So science yeah. fiction, you know, which started as scientific fiction, became science fiction. And
because it's easier to say.
Well, that was the main reason.
Yeah.
You went from Hugo Grinsback to John W. Campbell. And
whose magazine I'm in right now. Well, his
yes.
name. Yes.
Magazine that he used to edit.
Magazine. Well, he had
two magazines, Unknown Worlds and
Astounding.
Yes, but
he was still editing
the title
after
of
the name
Astounding.
To
I'm going to get an email from Barry Malzberg, who listens to this show and nitpicks me
okay.
correctly all the time. The proper name of the magazine is something like, okay, Barry, something like Astounding Tales of Space and Time. Andrew, this is Lister.
Hello.
Lister, this is Andrew. Lister, because he heard us talking about Rudyard Kipling, is bringing us water. Do you have any idea how subservient? I mean, it's an act of love on your part.
We were being critical of him, you know.
Yeah, yeah, but he's a Rasta, so
okay.
you know. So you have to deal with, well, let's okay. put it this way. You see him right now. Next time you see him, the pants will still be on. We hope.
Let's hope. I'm not in for that type of radio show at the moment.
It's not about his radio show follows mine. So
okay.
That's how he prepares. Yeah. What are you going to read?
I'm going to read a story of mine called The Big Day. It's something I finished writing.
Lister, we may run a few minutes over.
Yeah.
Thank you so much. You're a sweetie.
So I'm going to read this.
He's good about that.
Oh, cool. But, yeah, I finished this one. This has not been published. This is apart from the reading group. You kind folks out there are going to be the first people to understand this. And just so you know, I am going to stutter and stumble and hopefully won't swear when I mess up too badly. Oh, and there is a swear word at the end.
Thank you for reminding me, ladies and gentlemen and other furry things from the planet of whatever Douglas Adams named it. This portion of the program contains frank language. If you are offended by frank language, please tune out and rejoin us at 3 a.m. when Lister will no doubt shock you as well. But right now, we know that word number three is going to be involved in the telling of this tale. It is permitted by the Supreme Court of the United States. We have seen to that. And the fact that we are in safe harbor never went to the court because it was, the person who first tested it, they dropped the charges against me.
All right.
My guest that morning was Harlan Ellison, so, you know, figure out the rest.
Yeah. But, okay, so again, this story is called The Big Day. Here we go. The alarm chimed, waking me gently. Good morning, Maddie, Alex said brightly from the bedroom speakers. It is 9 o'clock in the morning. Today is Tuesday, September 18th. The weather forecast predicts clear skies all day with highs in the mid-70s and lows in the evening in the low 60s, with less than 5% chance of showers until midnight. Current temperature is 68 degrees. I rolled over and picked up my phone from the bedside table. Would you like me to read the morning's headlines? Alex asked. No, that's all right, I said, holding up my phone. Alex beeped in acknowledgement and went silent. I rubbed my eyes and woke the screen with a swipe. The usual overnight junk mail that seemed to get through my spam greeted me in my inbox. Mostly news alerts about the Pilgrim. Today's the big day, the subject of the first one said excitedly. The dawn of a new era begins today, another said. I highlighted and deleted all of them unopened. News about Pilgrim Probe was all the news bots had been sending out for at least 3 days, as if there wasn't a single person on the planet who didn't know about it. Beyond that, there was a message from my parents, another from Trent at the Dresden Gallery with a subject that made it look more personal than business, and a notification that there was a new high bid on the oak figurines I'd put up last week. That made me smile. They were already close to the price I wanted for them. A few more bids and the algorithm would kick in and promote the pieces to the front page as a top item. They were little more than dolls in a quick Polynesian style that I'd whittle off in the afternoon, but I still liked them, and they looked like they'd sell. Maybe when I was done with my current piece, it might be worth it to knock off a few more sets. I grabbed the long shirt from the end of the bed and pulled it over my head as I walked into the kitchen. Just the smell of the coffee brewing on the table was invigorating. I sat down, poured myself a cup, and huddled around it in my hands. The other end of the table lit up with a news feed display, which is a little strange as I hadn't asked Alex to do that. He had gotten an upgrade last month, though, so his anticipatory program might still be working out its kinks. On the display was a little spacecraft, the Pilgrim, hovering in the blackness of space, its shiny surface and solar panel wings visible in the light from the distant sun behind it. Just a sliver of Neptune rolled past the bottom of the screen. Over in the low right-hand corner, a clock counted down from a little under 6 hours, with a small title above it saying, Hyperspace, jump in. A friendly woman's voice was in the middle of the thought. To check the computation several more times and make sure that there are no errors, as even the slightest miscalculation at a distance of over 4 light-years could send Pilgrim to deep space, who would not be able to charge the solar cells and would be likely lost forever. Alex, flip the routers, I said. The display went blank for just a moment before the same image of Pilgrim came back on, this time with a ticker along the bottom of the screen rolling facts about the probe. Long used as a means for direct instant communication between the Mars autocolony and asteroid mining machinery, the Pilgrim will be the first attempt to use hyperspace as a mode of travel for matter. Try Clark's. The display blipped for only a second again before the same image came back, this time with a flashier countdown in the lower left. Goes according to plan, the Pilgrim's first job will be to establish a hyperspace relay back to our system and report its own safe arrival at Proxima Centauri. I sighed. Alex, find me some news that's not about the probe. After a few moments, Alex said, there is a live feed of the Municipal Zoning Commission public hearing in 5 minutes. That's it? I'm sorry, Maddie, but there are no national or international news streams not covering the Pilgrim hyperspace jump this morning, Alex answered. All the local feeds are preempted as well. Nothing at all. I'm sorry, no. Then, after a pause, Alex added, it is a very important story. I swore I heard a sense of insistent pride in Alex's voice, well beyond what the personality parameters should make possible. But I had barely had a couple of sips of coffee, so I thought I had imagined it. Turn it off, Alex, I said as I got up from the table. You not wish to watch the history being made? Alex asked. I ignored the question as I entered the workspace, coffee in hand. I'll be in the studio, I said to Alex. Mute my calls. After a few hours of scraping and carving, I stepped out onto the sidewalk and headed towards my favorite cafe for a late lunch. I had avoided the feeds all day as I worked, but I could see the hours hadn't changed anything. I could see the displays through the blinded windows of the restaurants, on the wall behind the gruff deli operators, even in the nice lobby of the swanky hotel as I passed on the street. Each one was all about the pilgrim, with that same static shot I'd seen this morning. Nobody seemed to be paying it much attention, if any attention, though. Well, there was one lonely guy looking in the dive bar at the corner who was watching, but he didn't look to be doing anything other than passing the time between sips. Besides him, everyone else was ignoring it and just going about their day. I took a table inside the cafe's barrier on the sidewalk, just outside the large windows that were open to the nice weather. I was surprised when I looked down at the order screen on the tabletop and found it tuned to the Pilgrim's live feed. Even here. I didn't even know these table order displays could do that. I swiped at it with my fingers and the order menu popped up. After scrolling up and down for a few times and trying to decide, I tapped in for a pastrami sandwich and an iced coffee. The order screen flashed a green check mark where the order was confirmed, but then insisted on going to the order menu. The little display went back to the live feed again. I put my book over the top of it and turned to look at the city street instead. I saw Charlie turn the corner up the street, looking lost in thought and heading my way. When he looked up from his feet and spotted me, he waved, smiling. I smiled back and gestured to the open air across from me. "Fancy seeing you here," he said as he sat down. I shrugged. "I'm a creature of habit." "As aren't we all," he said. "Get much done today?" "Not as much as I would have liked. Sugar maple doesn't carve as easily as the softer woods, but it'll look better than the basswood once I get there, I think. I'm just having a lunch break to rest my hands." "Not using laser tools?" "You know I never do." Charlie furrowed his brow. "I thought you might this time, at least until you get more used to working with the harder wood." "Sure, and maybe I program out the design on my pad and get the craft bot to cut it, and just sit back and watch." I shook my head slowly. "I make my own art with my own effort. Otherwise, there's no point." Charlie smirked at me lightly. "Mind if I jump on your bill? Just for tea," he said, reaching into his pocket for money. I waved him off. "It's fine. I owe you a drink anyway." He nodded and moved my book aside. His eyebrows raised when he saw Pilgrim still on the display. "Watching history being made, huh?" I shrugged at him absently. "I didn't turn it on." Charlie watched the screen, scratching his chin. "Looks like it's pulling in the solar panels now. It's just about to launch." "You following this whole thing?" I asked him. Charlie shrugged. "It's a casual interest." "Not like there's much of a choice, is there? Doesn't seem to be anything else on the feeds but the probe." "They are really trying to force it down onto us, aren't they?" "Well, it's not like a reality star wedding. This is something. Humanity's first step into another solar system." I shook my head. "Not humanity's. Humanity isn't going anywhere. That's just another piece of machinery." "Same thing." "Is it?" I looked down at the display. Pilgrim was latching its last folded-up solar panel tightly against its side. "I mean, look at that thing. With its panels all in, it looks like a giant water bucket. What's so exciting about shooting that thing anywhere?" Charlie glanced up at me. "You don't think it matters if it makes it?" "Well, it does. But what's it matter if it fails? They can just send another one. And if that one fails, another one. No big deal." "It's a pretty big price tag on the Pilgrim." "Money they wouldn't spend on us anyways." I shifted in my seat. "Of course, it's not nothing. I'm not saying it is. Maybe I'm just dried out on the constant coverage of it in the feeds. Everything since last Friday has been about the Pilgrim. Before that, every other thing was about it. I've learned everything that there is to know about it, and I haven't even been paying attention. And the thing is, I don't think anyone else has either. I don't know anyone who cares that much." I gestured down the display. "At least, not this much." "Well, somebody must." "Who?" "Look around. Where are all the people huddled around their displays, having watch parties, or even just talking about it? This conversation might be the only one I've had about it all week. Nobody cares. My home service system cares more."
Well, maybe in our happy little slice of heaven, people don't care that much, Charlie said. But that's not the whole world. I'm sure there are a lot of people following every second of this. I wouldn't have wall-to-wall coverage otherwise. Unless the newsfeed algorithms are all screwed up. Charlie smirked at me again, and then looked back down at the screen. Well, here we go. I looked back down at the display. In the lower corner, a countdown flashed 10, 9, 8. The back of Pilgrim started to glow a neon blue, and I couldn't be sure, but I thought I started to see it shake ever so slightly. The countdown went to 0 and quickly faded out, leaving the whole screen to Pilgrim alone. But for the longest moment, nothing seemed to happen. It just hung motionless against the black. Then the back of the pilgrim started to glow, which had been growing slowly, suddenly flashed blindingly, and the little silver bucket seemed to just kind of blink out of existence. Or maybe it shot like a bullet off the screen just at the limit of my perception, though that might have just been my imagination. Either way, all there was on the screen now was a blank, empty space. There it goes, Charlie said, sitting back up. Now all there's left to do is wait and see if it made it. I nodded. It'll take 45 minutes to recharge itself and send back the confirmation signal, right? Charlie thought for a moment. I think that's what they said, yes. Good, that'll give me more than enough time to eat my sandwich and get back to my studio before that. If I ever get my sandwich. I looked into the cafe. Where is the server? Inside I could see the server unit motionless at its station by the kitchen. Even if my sandwich wasn't ready yet, which would have been strange, it should have at least brought my drink by now. But just as I was about to get up and walk over to see what was going on in the service, the server snapped into action. My drink and sandwich came out of the conveyor of the kitchen, and the server raced them over to my table. I stayed a little longer than it took to eat my lunch, enjoying my conversation with Charlie, glad to talk about anything other than Pilgrim. Soon after that silver bucket shot off to nowhere, he seemed to have forgotten all about it. As did everyone else, to the extent that they had shown any interest to begin with. It was pretty much like it had never happened. I could see on the display at the bar across the street two human news anchors talking, though I guess they could have been still talking about the probe. At least it wasn't just that static picture of space anymore. Still an improvement. Eventually Charlie had to get back to his day and left, otherwise I might have stayed even longer. My hands still felt just a little weak from that morning, so I didn't know how long I could work on my new piece before I'd run the risk of damaging the carving more than helping it. Maybe a couple of hours. I felt I had to try and get farther on it before the idea started to fade on me. I passed the dive bar where I had been seeing the guy staring numbly at the display of the Pilgrim on the walk to the cafe. And inside the same guy was there, still staring up as if he hadn't even moved since I last walked past. Except now the display was showing a motocross event. Some guy in head-to-toe pads flew his motorbike off a dirt hill, his body jerking out behind him as he held on to the handlebars. He spread his legs out as far as he could at his sides, as the camera followed him through the air all the way back down to the ground, where he remounted his bike in a fraction of a second before he landed. I couldn't care less about bikes, but even I got a little thrill watching him, because there was a risk being taken. Maybe not all that much. You figure the writer knew his business, had practiced and trained for years to work his way up to do a trick like that. So it probably wasn't as dangerous for him as it may have looked. But there still was something at stake. Not like if the bike took a jump by remote control. Who would care about that? My phone beat several times in a row, just as I reached my front steps. I thought someone was trying to reach me, somehow leaving multiple frantic messages, one after the other. I stopped and took it out of my pocket. Somewhere in the back of my mind, it occurred to me that just a little over 45 minutes had passed since the Pilgrim had zipped across space. I opened my phone and saw several messages listed, all with the same subject line. Pilgrim reports from Proxima Centauri. New ones kept arriving in my inbox as I watched, pushing my previous messages off the bottom of the screen, and they kept coming. All around the city started to roar. Automated cars on the street by me whined their electric engines, honked their horns. I could hear appliances through the windows in my building all come on at full blast. All the servers and all the bars and the restaurants down the street started to beep and hum. I could see the billboards and traffic signals up and down the block flash the message in giant letters. And all kinds of speakers and all the devices everywhere started to play Beethoven's Ode to Joy. Countless other things I could not discern in the cacophony also happened, as every machine, possibly every machine on the entire planet, started to and this is the only way I could understand it, flip the fuck out in celebration. The end.
I was not expecting it to be that brief.
Yeah.
I thought it was longer, given, what was the word count?
That's 2,800 words or so.
2,800 words, so, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. I liked the pace more toward the end. The beginning you were, okay, sorry, I nitpick.
I know.
I nitpick the greatest readers in the world, since I have to edit, you know, professional narrators, yeah, nice. As well as writers. You know, I'll tell professional, I have told people whose name you know as big name actors, saying, no.
Well, I'm,
that's the wrong pronunciation, or read it slower. Oh, well, I only have one pronunciation knit for you.
Uh-oh.
Cacophony.
Cacophony?
Yeah.
I'm just lucky I got through with
that. Cacophony is pretty good, though. I like that. No, you didn't do cacophony, you.
I think I did cacophony, didn't I?
Maybe you did.
I should just be thrilled I was able to say it without
you stopping. Wrote a good story, okay? And you read it well.
Well, I'm more of a writer than I am a reader. That's... This is actually this is probably the first thing I've read.
You're going to have to take my course.
Okay. This is the first thing I've read out loud in maybe 25 years.
Yeah. So you said. But I actually, the name of my course is Reading Aloud for Writers.
Ah.
Not for narrators. It's a totally different thing. Writers, like you, are perfectly capable of expressing their stories as well as any narrator, sometimes better, because you know the true intent and you know the inner voice.
Yeah. I always enjoy watching. See, I'm not...
A good actor, a good narrator is a great thing. But a writer is what they call nowadays the creative.
Yeah. I like for the reading you do downstairs...
The reading series downstairs, or KGB reading. Or the KGB, or the Air One, or the new one that Randy Dawn is launching. I don't even know the name is, but Barbara's reading in May, my partner Barbara. Yes.
I enjoy watching a writer read their own material. I enjoy watching to see what they put emphasis on, the way they read it. But oddly enough, I don't really care for audio versions of stories otherwise. Like some actor reading something Silverberg wrote. I don't care for that as much. I only care when it's the writer themselves reading their work.
That's
what
interests
me.
It depends on the narrator. I mean, Clark's World.
Mm.
Let me, you know, I work for Lightspeed. Fine. Let me name the closest thing that we have to competition would be Beneath Ceaseless Skies and Clark's World. The way that Kate Baker reads for Clark's World is brilliant.
Mm.
She really, really takes the written word and brings it to another dimension.
Okay. I'll have to try it sometime because I will read things in Clark's World, but I won't actually do the audio things because I just prefer reading things.
Give her a try. Although I noticed that Alethea Contis, who is not only a fine writer, but damn it, a graduate of my course in how to read aloud. It's true. It's one of the first people.
Mm.
I couldn't believe that I saw that she did several stories this month. But at a Nebula Award banquet weekend, I did 6 hours of workshop on writers reading aloud, and she was like the prize pupil.
Oh, okay.
And she does, I mean, but I was thinking of her reading her own work. Now she's reading other people's work. She's good.
Yeah, that's good.
All that aside, you have a good voice. You have a good sense of reading.
Hmm.
And, you know, the rest is off the air. But it was good.
Oh, thank
so
you.
So there. Be like
I like this story.
I like it, too.
The thing is weird about this...
Yes, I know I left the room at one point.
I know.
But there are monitors all the way down, and I heard
every
word.
This is... If I'm not... There was two stories I wrote around this time. I believe this is the one I actually wrote this in one sitting.
Wow. That's amazing.
I know. It's the most productive writing moment I've...
What is that, like stream of consciousness practice?
Well, when I say one sitting, I did actually get up like four times to go to the bathroom.
Well, there's that.
Yeah.
Yes,
but I mean, literally, I started writing...
In one session...
I started writing it at about 12:30 in the afternoon because, you know, I got up in the morning, did my morning stuff and various other things.
Your ablutions, yes.
Yeah, whatever. You know, Crank on Twitter, whatever I was doing that day. Then around 12:30, I started writing it.
I wonder if Crank on Twitter is an ablution. For some people, probably
maybe.
Is.
But you know how it is. I figured, okay, I'm going to try this basic idea. I'm going to try it, and I figure I'll get like maybe 1,000 words done. Next thing I know, it's like 7:30, 8 o'clock at night, and I've written the entire first draft of the story.
Wow. Put on your headphones.
Oh, headphones.
Yeah, headphones. It's time for the headphones.
This is going to mess up my hair.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, it's that is the entire total intention. Good morning. You are on the radio. Yellow. You ought to be on the air. I've got the right things on. Well, sorry, I apologize. Call back. Let's try this one. Good morning. You're on the radio. Ooh, clearly I am doing something wrong here. And I have no idea what. It worked the last few times.
Okay.
Although it's those same two phone lines that have been ringing all the time. So maybe there's just a disconnect. So, folks, okay, if you wish to dial in and speak with A.T. Sayre on Hour of the Wolf, the telephone number here is area code 212-209-2877. Oh. Okay, you are on the radio now.
Good morning, Mr. Sayre. What a great little ending to your story. I was waiting
you
for
just,
that.
You were just waiting for the dirty language.
No, well, you said a swear word was coming, James. I didn't hear it. I did hear it.
I swear.
I made sure to remind him because he was very adamant that I should make sure to remind him.
Well, you know what I thought? It's funny. I thought
it's
the
not
word
a that, it's not a legal necessity, but it's a smart thing to do.
Yeah, and I know. And it's funny because just before the ending of the story, you used a euphemism to the actual word, and I said, no, that can't be the word. You know, a five-letter word that has to do with an implement.
Is that what you've tuned in for to hear the potential of swear words?
No,
are you secretly the person who turns us into the FCC every week,
oh,
Robert?
Certainly not. I could care. Listen. Believe me, what I've heard in books and heard is from readers. And on the radio,
I have seen the best minds of my generation. Never mind.
Oh dear.
By the way,
I thought I'd get you to howl on that.
By the way, just a quick thought. Thank you for mentioning the fact that what did you say that there are now two BBC shows all in Welsh? Did I hear you say?
Yes, I only read about the other one, and it's brand new. I forgot what it is, but Keeping Faith is the first one.
Well, you know, I have always said and. Being a lover of the Celtic languages, I have always said that God created the Welsh language on the eighth day of creation, and he was in a bad mood when he did it. I will say this, by the way, thank you for mentioning Wales. We just recently celebrated St. David's Day, March 1st. It's the anniversary of that patron saint of the Welsh.
Well, yeah, not. They didn't mention it in my synagogue. It's weird.
Oh, they did?
Yeah.
Well,
listen, Robert, thank you. It is time for us to go away.
I have a quick question to ask you.
I'm 3 minutes over now.
Are you going to Heliosphere?
No.
You're not?
No.
Bye.
Bye.
All right.
I might have. I was invited. I dogged my heels in answering, and at this point it's a quest. I mean, I'm not sure for sure that my the next KGB reading next week is not
it's already been canceled.
It's already been canceled. They're going to do something on YouTube.
Mm-hmm.
The next New York Review of Science Fiction readings, which promises to be one of our best and best attended, maybe zero attended because of current events. Stay tuned. But, you know, things are in flux, people.
Yeah.
The Great Story by Robert Silverberg.
They're always great by Robert
Silverberg. Oh, yeah, but one about just this situation.
Okay. So,
A.T. Sayre, S-A-Y-R-E.
Before we go, I should make sure and mention that I have a story currently in the current
issue.
Oh,
God, yes.
Currently in Analog Yet magazine. My very first professional sale, my story called Rover.
Congratulations.
Thank you very much. And also, I should mention that Starship Sofa is going to be doing one of my stories on the 18th.
Very good. So all you need is a third one, and then you're not an associate member of
Starship
Science Fiction
isn't
Writers.
Professional sale. It was a reprint.
Oh.
Yeah.
I think it counts. Ask.
I'll ask around.
Ask Kate Baker.
I'll ask.
But
available on the
18th. Secretary of Science Fiction Writers of America is who I'm naming.
Okay.
But or Mary Kowal.
Available on the 18th. Through Starship Sofa, my story, I'm Not Robert, is going to be available. And I'm quite proud of both stories. And
oh, I read that one.
Yeah, did you like it?
Yes, I did. I heartily recommend it.
Yeah. And the thing in the analog, did you read the analog story?
Not yet.
That's one everybody else seems to like a lot, too.
Okay, well, yeah, or wouldn't have sold to Analog.
Well, the thing I love about it is this is very quick, like, shortly after it came
theme,
out.
Theme music is over.
Oh, no.
There are 11 seconds left to
the
show.
Oh, the story's more than 11
seconds. 8, 7, 6,